Okay, so signs and symptoms of hydrocephalus. You're going to have signs of increased fluid pressure. So some things that you can be assessing for are a tense or bulging anterior fontanelle. Because as that pressure goes up and the fluid builds up, that's one place for it to escape to try and help decrease that pressure is it's going to go into that fontanelle. Their scalp can become thin and shiny as that skin is being stretched. You can see their scalp veins begin to dilate and grow, and then their cranial suture lines are going to begin to separate because as the pressure builds up in the brain and it begins to grow and become larger, it's going to pull those sutures apart if they still have the ability to separate. Other clinical symptoms you're going to see is vomiting. They can begin to have a wide bridge between their eyes as their sutures begin to separate. They can also get bulging eyes as the pressure behind their ocular cavity is pushing their eyes out. Okay, another sign and symptom of a severe form of hydrocephalus, their head size increases rapidly. The infant can have a very shrill, high-pitched cry because of the pain and the pressure of the increased fluid. Hyperirritability and restlessness are also a sign and symptom. For older children, you will not see that head enlargement because their suture line is closed, so the head cannot grow. Okay, but what you will see is papilla edema. You can see spasticity in their muscle movement. They will complain of headaches. They can have ataxia, which is they're unsteady. Okay, altered mental status. They get very lethargic, irritable. They can demonstrate confusion. And then another symptom that you can see is strabismus. So their eyes are going to wander. They can't focus their eyes together at the same time. Okay, so what are we going to do for our patients with hydrocephalus? Okay, they're going to do surgery. They're going to insert a ventricular peritoneal shunt or a VP shunt, which is a catheter that's going to go from the ventricle in the brain down the back of the neck into their peritoneal cavity to allow that fluid to drain. Okay, so nursing care. For pre-op nursing care, some of the assessments we're going to be doing is a daily head circumference. We want to see if that pressure is increasing or staying the same as the patient is preparing to go to surgery. Size and fullness of their anterior fontanelle. We're going to be assessing behavior as well as nutrition status because they can have vomiting from the increased intracranial pressure. Assessing fluid and electrolyte needs. Okay, positioning can become very important. We want to prevent pressure ulcers. Okay. If these infants, if their head is very large, they will have difficulty moving it. So we don't want them to get, excuse me, skin breakdown on their head just from them not being able to move. Okay, we're going to want to make sure that we're supporting the neck very well because their head is going to be very heavy and large. And then good skin care. Okay, neurological assessments, we're going to be assessing their level of consciousness, if they have irritability, assessing their vital signs to make sure that pressure isn't going up so much that it's affecting their vital signs, and then also observing for any seizure activity. Okay, for post-op care, after they get the shunt put in, we're going to be monitoring feeding and behavior patterns to make sure that they're getting back up to what they should be. We're going to be assessing for increased intracranial pressure and cerebral irritability because we want to make sure that that shunt is functioning. If we're starting to see signs of ICP, We need to notify the physician because it could be a malfunction of the shunt. Okay, for the head of the bed, we're going to keep the head of the bed flat or at a very low set elevation. And we're doing this because if we elevate the head of the bed, gravity will help drain that fluid off. But we do not want a rapid drainage of that fluid out of the from the brain down into the peritoneal cavity, because we don't want a rapid shift of fluid because it can cause seizure disorders. Okay, shunt observation. We're going to be assessing for signs of infection along the incision line. We are also going to be measuring abdominal girth, because if their abdominal girth starts growing rapidly, it could be indicative that the fluid is draining too fast or that it's draining too much fluid out of their ventricles. Assessing valve function. So we want to be assessing if there's a blockage, which if there's a blockage, you would start seeing signs of increased intracranial pressure, and also feeling along the line of the shunt to see if there's any parts where it would feel like it's separated. We are also going to be helping with emotional needs. Okay, holding and cuddling the infant. We don't want the parents to think that they can't pick them up or give them love because of the surgery. And then also teaching the family about what to be watching for with this shunt placement. Okay, the next disorder we're going to be talking about is cerebral palsy. Cerebral palsy is a nonspecific disorder which is characterized by early onset of movement and posture impairments. Okay, so they're going to have abnormal muscle tone and coordination. Okay, one thing about cerebral palsy is cerebral palsy is caused by a hypoxic brain injury, either in utero, during birth. It can be later on in life. There is a patient at Caring Corner that some of you have had the chance to meet and interact with that has cerebral palsy due to a near drowning event when they were 2 years old. Okay, so it is not a genetic disorder. It's caused by a hypoxic event to the brain. Okay, so some things that you can see is they can have spastic muscle movements. Okay, they can be hypertonic and stiff, or they can have the dyskinetic, slow, worm-like movements. Okay, there's different ranges of cerebral palsy, different severities, depending on the lack of how long the hypoxic event went on. Okay, they can have speech alterations secondary to delayed tongue movements. But most of the, unless there's another underlying disease process or disorder going on, your patients with cerebral palsy can have normal intelligence and just have the muscle and posture impairments going on. Okay, the next disorder we're going to talk about is spina bifida. Spina bifida occurs because there is a failure of the neural tube to close during early development in utero. Okay, so one part of it, at whatever part down the neural tube, it doesn't close, which that's caused due to a lack or a low level of folic acid. That's why we encourage our moms to take those prenatal vitamins and to get that folic acid in during those early months of pregnancy. The treatment option for spina bifida is early surgical closure. So they're going to go in and surgically close that neural tube. Now, associated problems with that can include hydrocephalus. It can include paralysis, depending on where along that neural tube the defect occurred, and bone deformity. So depending on how high up that opening is on the neural tube, the more severe the problems are going to be for your patient. So important aspects to remember for module 6. One is we need to do a very good detailed neuro assessment. And just remember that in children, your neuro assessment is not going to be the same as it's going to be on an adult. For your older kids that you can ask those questions to and determine if they're confused or have an altered level of consciousness, it can become a little easier. The younger your patient is, the more you're going to have to rely on the parent's input and just knowing that they are not meeting those milestones or not acting the way that they're supposed to act. If the parents are telling you that their child is acting abnormally, we need to pay attention to it and really start doing something about it. We don't want to just blow it off as, oh, they don't feel good, they're just acting irritable. If the mom or dad's telling you that something's wrong, we need to pay attention to it.